Hello there, welcome to The Catch-Up. Tell you what, if you love drugs, you're going to be very happy. This is back.
I was wondering where you were going with that.
Oh, yeah.
Are we allowed to say big in this intro?
No. I've just beeped that, so no one's going to know what you said.
What?
It's almost a red card.
No, I wanted to talk about the NT News, dude. The guy who comes up with all those dildo... Am I allowed to say dildo? Oh, don't do this to me.
You're treading a fine line.
Oh, can we put the words on a board?
Yeah, we can.
The NT News spoke to him about the Peter Falconio letter that he received and also about our favourite photograph of all time featuring some interspecies work, which is very good fun. I don't know. What else? What else?
Also, Gordy Tallis. Oh, we asked Gordy Tallis this question as well, but big names on your aeroplane.
Great segment. Ooh. Heaps of big names on people's aeroplanes. Enjoy yourself. Have a nice catch-up. We will catch you soon, Eve.
I think everyone remembers the case of Bradley John Murdoch, who's found guilty of Peter Falconio's murder up in the Northern Territory, and the stories are unbelievable. You know, where's the body? It's always gone on. Well, there was a letter received by the NT News a couple of days ago talking about an associate of Murdoch's, one of Murdoch's Bradley Murdoch's closest friends.
Yeah.
He had an associate who he told what had gone on with the body. There was apparently Murdoch gave it to this guy. He took it on a train from Adelaide up to Geraldton. There's all sorts of things that are in this letter that there's so many question marks, but the police seem to be taking it seriously. And more importantly, it went to NT News, and we've got Matt Williams, the editor, on the line now. Mate, what is it about this letter with all the information in it?
Well, it was a very interesting letter I got come across my desk on Tuesday morning. It was in an envelope, which is clearly sent from north of London. And, upon opening the letter, found a one-page document containing information from a guy who claims to know where the remains of missing British backpacker Peter Falconio are.
Is it legit? I mean, the very fact you've got a letter in an envelope on your desk, I would have thought, is quite unusual in this day and age. But do you think it's for real?
Look, it's really hard to tell. It's the police are obviously early on in their investigation, but there were a lot of specifics outlined in the letter, a lot of which we haven't been able to report yet due to legal reasons. Okay. But the police are certainly treating it as serious at this stage. I've just seen some reports from London overnight. The Falconio family there have been informed about this letter by the police. So one thinks that... That's a good sign that the police are certainly treating this one quite seriously.
So have the cops headed to Geraldton or anything?
We believe they haven't yet. We're running a story today saying initially their investigation will focus on trying to track down this named associate in the letter and indeed trying to determine whether or not he did have links to Bradley John Murdoch, who was, of course, convicted of Peter Falconio's killing. So we understand West Australian police haven't been called on to assist at this stage, but I know their police commissioner, Carlo Callaghan, I think his name is, yesterday said he was aware of the media coverage of the of what happened, and, you know, they'll be standing ready to help if required.
So this story will play itself out. We'll keep an eye on it. Now, your story's in the NT News while we've got you here. Where do you get all these things from? Or is it just what really happens?
Are you talking about serious stuff or the funny stuff?
Oh, no, the funny stuff.
Give us
the horny. What was the one? The horny.
Horny ghost haunts house.
Yeah, those
ghost haunts house. We had the.
Someone got hit in the head with a dildo.
The pig in the roo getting amorous.
Now, Matt. I'm so glad that we got together here because that photograph is the backbone of our relationship, me, Marto, and Brendan.
We love
because
it.
There's a duck that's sat down to watch. There's a wonderful, there's a beautiful statue far in the distance. When you're sitting there and sometimes you're getting letters about the most infamous murder in Australia come across your desk, but sometimes one of your photographers says, "G'day, editor. Matt, mate, I think I got something for the front page. There's a pig being amorous with a kangaroo and there's a duck watching. What do you do when that comes across your desk?"
Well, the beauty of being the editor of the NT News is that when something like that comes across my desk, a photo, I can go, right, bang, front page, beautiful, whereas every other paper in the country will go, not even touching it.
They've done the press.
They put that in as a sport, wouldn't they?
I love it, mate.
They wouldn't even give it a run, let alone
you're right.
Sport.
So. They don't have the guts to run the hard-hitting journalism, mate. They do not have the guts.
Matt, have you done a follow-up on how things are at that farm?
Funnily enough, you asked, we did a follow-up about 3 weeks ago and the relationship's off.
That's
heartbreaking. The pig and the kangaroo have parted ways, and I think they've filed a divorce with the kangaroo court. And,
kangaroo court, that's good.
What's the duck going to watch?
Netflix.
We're going to put that photo up on Triple M because I haven't seen it, and I need to know what you're talking about. But I'm guessing, Matt, it was probably one of your most successful, yes?
Yeah, it was. I think it was about July last year we ran it on the front page. I can't for the life of me think of what the headline was, but it was a pretty good one. It was a hilarious story from a guy in Central Australia who, funnily enough, his name is Greg Dick. So that story had...
many layers.
It's got levels. And meanwhile, the Pulitzer continues to elude you.
Matt Williams, keep up the good work up there at NT News.
Thanks, guys.
Listen, I read this article while I was on a plane last weekend.
Not good.
It was about a stick shaker, I think was the name of it, where a big plane, like a big passenger plane flying from Hong Kong to Melbourne, almost stalled in midair because another plane went over the top. And I started reading this article and it said there's too many planes in the sky and their turbulence is now vibrating and almost knocking other planes out. And then I open up the paper, there's a Learjet had flipped 3 times because one of those big A380s went over the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's something going on in our skies, and I just wanted to get an expert, and we've got one, Captain Byron Bailey, aviation expert, former RAAF pilot, and also captain for Emirates for 15 years. He knows his stuff. Byron, good morning, mate.
Good morning, guys.
You've obviously heard about these stories that I've started to read about lately about stick shaker and stalling and all this sort of stuff.
So what actually happens, Captain? You're in the air, everyone's cruising along, you know, you're sitting back, you might be watching a movie, doing whatever. What does it feel like in the plane itself when something like this happens?
Well, if you're passing behind another aircraft, you know, it's 20 miles ahead, you'll get a few little bumps, you know, like mild turbulence. And I've had A380s pass over the top of me quite often, and I've been in Challenger jets. Now, that's so unusual. To get a stick shaker that they supposedly did for 2 minutes is really strange. And I believe they were entering the hold prior to the descent in Hong Kong at an intermediate altitude, and you enter the hold and you hold quite slowly. So if you hit someone else's wake turbulence, the aircraft is near the edge of the flight envelope, you could end up in that stick shaker scenario. But the stick shaker is not a stall. It's just a warning of stall about 7% above your stalling speed. Strange. Very strange.
You are my kind of captain.
Very
you
funny.
Are talking language I have no idea, but it sounds like you're really smart and you know how to drive a plane. But tell me this. Are there a lot of private flights that you guys do? Like you said, you're bringing a private jet back to Australia.
Man. With a famous Australian, I can't reveal their identity, he's just bought themselves another jet. And so they've asked me to fly it back for them, which I'll do soon. I'm in Dallas at the moment about to do a simulator for this particular type of aircraft.
Greg Norman, can we just throw names up and you just make noises? Is it Keith Urban?
No, not Greg Norman.
Not Keith Urban?
Oh, getting close. Actually, my friend flew Nicole Kidman last week, but I shouldn't say that.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So does she have her own plane?
All these rich people have their own planes. I was supposed to do that flight with Nicole to take her down to the Australian Grand Prix, but a friend of mine, unfortunately, pinched it off me.
Isn't that the worst, when they pinch your private jets off you? Hey, Captain, have you ever flown Snoop Dogg's private jet? Apparently that one gets a bit whiffy.
Well, I've flown a few different sports personalities that I could tell you things about.
Give us a couple, Captain.
Airfield stars.
Come on, give me something. Something that goes on in a plane that we would have no idea about.
Well, you know, Matthew McConaughey, the film star.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, well, I had him, you know, on the flights. We're descending into Sydney, and he poked his head up. You know, and I'm pointing out the Harbour Bridges at night and the beautiful view of Sydney. And he had his face about 6 inches to the right of mine. I'm sitting in the left seat. And I had this feeling, gosh, if I turned and kissed him on the cheek, I'd make a million women jealous.
He wouldn't have minded, old oh, Matthew. That's great. Captain Byron Bailey, our resident, now you're our resident aviation expert now. Good on you, mate. We'll speak to you soon.
Please do. Anytime. Thank you very much.
That's big names on his plane, hasn't he?
Has he? What?
Which leads us. Oh.
Big names in your airplane. They're all over the place. The big names in your airplane.
We've heard some. Can we go around the grounds?
Right.
Who have you had on a plane you've been on with?
I walked past when I was 16 and going to America by myself, Dolly Parton.
Beautiful.
Do you say hello?
I did. I was young and I was just so impressed.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
When Dolly was sitting upright, did the front of her touch the seat in front of her?
You can't ask that.
If she was in economy, it would have. But being in first, she was okay.
Boom room. That's what you pay for.
Boom room.
You know, the problem is that you've got to walk past them. All right, my favourite one of all time, because they always sit in the first three seats on Qantas, because they're important people, Barnsley. Now, he got on early, so he must love it, because then I wasn't far after him, but I sat in about row 6 or 7 and watched the whole thing unfold. Every single male that hopped onto that plane said, "G'day, Barnsley."
Yep.
He had to say hello, and he kept his cool and everything else. So why wouldn't he get on last? Because he'd get Barnsley'd. He'd get Barnsley'd more than any other human.
Of course he would. No, Barnsley, that's good. Brendan, how'd you go?
Mate, flying back from Fiji, cop this bit of Carl Sanderlands.
Oh, God. Same question about Dolly Parton for him, but just a lower part of the front of his body. Yes, that's a fat joke. Get over it. Okay.
What about you?
Well, I'm about to win. Just a young man, a young blonde man that's done more for Queensland than possibly anyone, even the Queen herself or anyone you want to go back. I was just sitting on a plane, one of my many planes, minding my own beeswax.
Yeah.
Then who should shuffle past me? And the good thing was his face was at my elbow height.
It's Alan.
Alan Langer.
Did you talk to him?
Alan Langer. No, you don't speak to Alan.
Why?
Because he's Alan.
Hey, Alfie.
No, God, no. He was on his way. Goodness knows where he was sitting. I think he was in the overhead compartment, but he was just Alan Langer.
Isn't that funny? They can't get away from you, though. People can't get away from you on the plane.
Come on, let's play this game.
Big names in your airplane. They're all over the place. The big names in your airplane.
We were just talking to a pilot, and somehow we got on to he flies a lot of famous people around in private jets. And
Matthew McConaughey, he was talking about how he could have kissed him.
That was weird. Nicole Kidman. Nicole Kidman flying her around. Hey, can I just give you one more? In the old days before the GFC, Fox Sports, we used to fly in business class. Yeah. Sitting in 1A one day, okay? 1A. And next to me, Tubby Taylor. When we get off the plane, and let's remember what happens when you're in that front row, you're the first off. All right, the door opens. Tubby was just ahead of me. I elbowed him. I said, "Let me lead him out, Tub." Because when you get the first off the flight, you always saw Tubby Taylor at cricket. He was leading the team on the field. "Let me lead him out, Tub." Led the plane out.
That's funny.
Was that a moment?
Well, it was. It was a magic moment.
That is a magic moment.
And he let
a chance
you.
To say, "Tub, let me lead him out." It's like I'm playing my 50th test. I'll take over here, Tub.
Thanks, Tubbs.
Jeff
I'll take
is
it from me.
Bribey. Jeff, who was the big name on your airplane?
Mate, Costazoo. And his little man, big man.
He is really little, isn't he?
He is a tiny man with a huge heart.
Oh. He's good. I love Costazoo. Did he have the rat's tail brewing, Jeff?
Had the rat's tail, mate, had rosemary beads in his left hand, but he was signing autographs for anybody, and I just walked up to him, and he went to give an autograph, said, "Mate, don't want your autograph, just want to shake your hand, you're an awesome man."
Where was the plane going from and to?
Rocky to Brisbane.
Been in Rocky at a sportsman's night, probably, had he?
Rocky.
He was holding rosemary beads, though.
But of course, the box is going to Rocky. All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Oh, I gotcha.
Here we go. It is Will from Kapira. Will.
How are you? I'll play on the plane with me on the way back from LA last year. So playing peekaboo with my young fella.
Oh, my God.
Chris Martin was.
All of them were.
Oh.
Wow.
Peekaboo on a plane's quite fun for kids because there's a lot. Oi, there he comes from the seats. Are you telling me they were getting involved? They were actually nice, normal blokes?
Yeah. One of them was doing yoga on the way back.
Which move? Which
yoga?
The
bald guy? Was it the bald bloke that was doing yoga?
I can't tell you off the top of my head now. It's fuzzy. I just remember him playing with my young fella and doing yoga.
Yeah, that's great. Well, done, Will. That's
you would have had to have been the front end of the plane then, were you, Will?
Yep.
Oh, look at you guys.
That's right.
That's good.
Now, nothing was your, the best with, for Will.
Was your kid up in the business class as well?
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Will down. He's got some money.
Well thanks, done, Will. Rob Vinogra, who was the big name on your plane?
Well, you know, obviously going through LA, you know, there's a lot of celebrities you kick around there. But, yeah, I just started walking down with one of my mates and you just see these 7 foot dudes walking past you and you sort of take a double take. One of them was the Big Show, one's the Undertaker, and then there's Kane.
Get out!
No, not even kidding. So anyway, we thought, okay, you know, a bit starstruck. And then we get on the Qantas flight. And I get stuck next to the Big Show.
Oh, my God.
That's incredible. Robin has no idea what you're talking about.
Big Show's like 200 kilograms. He's enormous, yeah. World's biggest
but what
man.
What is he?
A wrestler.
Oh,
let's go back to the start, Rob. Oh, Jesus. Okay. I'll get a photo for her.
Thanks, Rob.
We're impressed, Rob. That's a goodie.
I will be.
What did you talk to the Big Show about, Rob?
Actually, he was actually hungry. So we got on the Qantas. This was back in 2011. This is back in 2011 when Qantas flights were sort of getting overbooked out of LA. Yeah. So like Hamish and Andy were even over there trying to get on a flight.
Oh, hang on.
And anyway, I sort of scored an upgrade because my mum was working for Qantas. So me and my mate got upgraded to business and got chucked in with these guys. And then halfway through the flight, we sort of went up and asked for another sandwich and then came back and they all just stared at us like, where'd you get that from?
Big Show wants an extra sanger. Love it, Rob. Love it.
That's the Undertaker and Big Show hungry. You're in trouble.
Here comes Glenn. Glenn is from Springfield. Glenn, the big name that was on your flight.
Well, we weren't up the front of the plane, but I had Mercedes Corby on my plane coming back from Bali.
Oh, Mercedes Corby on the way back from Bali. Now, Glenn, I heard a story once that she got upset and chewed through her seatbelt. Is that true?
I don't know. We got on and off the plane a couple of times because of the security.
Gosh, Mercedes. Were people saying hello, Glenn? What do you do when you see Mercedes Corby?
Do you say hello?
Well, my wife had just read the book and we went to Bali for our honeymoon. She's like, if I see Mercedes Corby, I'd tell her what for. And I was like, well, there's your opportunity.
Oh, my God. Did she carry through?
No, she didn't say anything. We just sat there. That was it. So it was quite funny.
Just looking at Mercedes.
That's Glenn has to win, doesn't he? I love the Big Show, but Glenn has to win.
Mate, a very talented ventriloquist, David Strassman, is coming back to town 23rd of May at qpac.com.au. You are going to iTeddy for free.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you.
Nice one.
What a great game.
What a fun game. Yeah, we should maybe alternate between workplace and planes.
Oh, absolutely we will.
Go right ahead.
Page 9 of today's Career Mail. As a woman, as a mother, and particularly as a mother of 3 kids of one gender, this interests me. However, I'm genuinely interested to know whether it interests blokes. Selection of gender of a baby. Do you care about being able to say, okay, I've got 2 boys and now I want a girl?
Oh, God. When it gets down the line, if you have a pigeon pair, boy and then a girl, a boy, you put it in the rack. Yeah, you've jagged it. But if you get a number of them, I know this because I married the 6th daughter of a family that finally the 7th child was a son. And my wife only found out recently it was known as the disappointment. Because that was going to be a son, the 6th one. And then finally they went again. No, if they had gender, there's somebody who should have been able to pick the gender.
So do you think it's okay?
After 2 kids, I reckon you should be able to pick the gender of your kid.
Ed, you're pregnant? Tiff is.
Well, Tiff is.
I hate it when people say we're pregnant.
No.
Excellent, mate. Show us your uterus.
I'm with you.
Put that on a T-shirt.
Listen, I would say... I wouldn't pick. I don't know, but I was brought to this when I did a job with a former NRL Origin star, and he was talking about how some of his mates and him were going to go over to, I think it was America, because they'd all had daughters, 2 daughters, 3 daughters, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And the next child, he just said, and he was very honest with me. He goes, mate, I love my daughters. I love them to death, but if for a little bit of money, I can choose whether or not it's a son next time, I'm going to do it.
See, and they do say with sports people, they often have girls.
Contact injuries. They're finding out now it's more contact injuries.
Well, the reason why all this has come up anyway is the National Health Medical Research Council yesterday released revised guidelines for assisted reproductive treatments, which is whether you can retain a ban on sex selection. And basically, they're saying they're going to keep that ban in place.
So
and
people no are helping.
It's not illegal in Queensland. It's illegal in Victoria and Western Australia.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, it's not illegal here, but it's not recommended. And if you're going to do it, there is a bit of a stigma attached to it. But I am interested.
Well, what about you? You had three boys. If you had to go again after the second one, would you have wanted a girl? Because I know I've got one sister, I've got two sister-in-laws with three or four boys and no girls, and they all just are so pine. They would have loved a girl.
I wanted four kids and Tony didn't. And the problem was that I did want a girl. And I realised that you have to be happy with four boys. But, you know, now with my circumstances changing and their father dying, I am so glad I have three of the same gender.
Uh-huh. Oh.
And, you know, life can serve you up a whole pile of stuff that you have no idea what's going to happen. But because I've got three kids who are all interested in similar things, they're really good mates. If there'd been a girl in that, I think it would have been a lot more difficult for us to cope. So, you know, you get what you need, I reckon.
What do you reckon? Would you pick or have you picked gender of your child? Do you think it's the right thing to do? Do you think you should be able to pick the gender of your... Well, because it's because some people say
playing
that tampering with that might lead to some other tampering.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what I'm saying? Because in the process, you can sort of... You can get very selective. Because, you know, there's a lot of that now about the twins thing. It's no surprise that there are people having more and more twins with IVF, which is great. People would be able to have children that couldn't have them. But then it's like, well, if we're doing this, then we may as well be able to pick what the gender is of these twins.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't agree with that one. But if you've gone down the line, what's the limit? If you've had three kids of the same gender, then let's not make it two. Let's make it three. You're allowed to access this technology.
Should you be able to pick the gender of your child? Lee from Jimboomba.
Absolutely. You should be able to tailor make it exactly to your liking.
Not just gender. Do you mean design your baby in other ways?
Absolutely. Well, think of it, Marto. When you buy a dog, you already know the gender, the breed, the colour, everything you want before you start looking. You buy a car, you know the make, the model, the colour of the interior, what size motor it has, what fuel it runs on. Yet when you have a kid,
it's a lottery.
Have that.
You've broken it down, Lee, quite nicely.
You've thought about this a lot,
it's common sense. I mean, and a kid lives four times longer than a dog and lasts probably 10 times longer than a car.
Okay, have you got
kids,
Lee?
It's not a bad viewpoint.
Yeah, I've got two kids.
You
don't
happy
mind either of them.
Cool.
Lee wants to put him back in. Thank you, Lee.
There's something to that.
Ellen's from Upper Coomera. You're exactly who we want to speak to, Ellen. Ellen, how many boys have you got?
I've got five boys.
Yeah. Wow.
Ranging from, nearly 35 down to 15.
Well, let's remember, after you had the third one, you're going for your fourth one. You wanted a girl, and then when you had a fourth one, how did it play out?
I didn't really care, as long as they're healthy and you know they've got everything they need. I think we should be thankful for that.
But you must want a little girl in your life.
I've got five granddaughters.
Ah, there you go.
Payoff.
And you can give them back.
Yeah, that's it. Awesome, eh? First one was a grandson, but then the girls came.
Have you girls ever heard the saying, there's a place in heaven for a mother of three boys?
There's a special place in heaven.
Have you heard that is a saying, isn't it?
Absolutely it is.
There's one for you, Ellen.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Ellen.
There's a whole area just for Ellen behind a velvet robe.
Do you know there's a mother of sons lunch that happens every year?
Yeah.
And every year they sell out. I mean, tickets went on sale yesterday at 10 and I think by midday they'd sold 450 of them.
Are you allowed to have daughters or it's only if you have sons?
You can only go if you're a mother of only sons. But they every year they get up on stage and they do a count to see who's got the most sons. And the year that I was there, which was a couple of years ago, there was a woman with seven sons and she was pregnant again.
Whoa.
No.
I didn't see her the following year, so maybe she got her daughter.
Maybe she got a daughter. Hey, Phil from Logan, what do you reckon? Should you be able to choose the gender of your kids, Phil?
Absolutely not.
Ooh.
Why not, buddy?
Why not? Well, we're here as parents to guide the kids, nurture the kids. They are a gift. to us as parents. Why the hell should we have the right to play God?
How do they do it? Does anyone know how they actually
fertilize a number of eggs, and then after a while they'll start to show, I believe, and then they pick the ones and reinsert. I'm probably mashing it horribly, but that's what I believe.
So we're making ourselves God. That's what you have a problem with, Phil.
Yeah, I do, because I have two daughters myself. My wife and I wanted to try for a third one, but we weren't allowed to on medical grounds, so I'm more than happy with what I've got. I've already got one child that's graduated high school and the other one's graduating this year.
Right.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
You're quite passionate about this, Phil. Have you been asked, or do you want a son?
No. My girls are part boys on their own in the first place.
Yeah, right.
Both of my daughters are both involved, have been involved at different points in motorsport before they were teenagers.
Okay.
My daughter was able to drive a car on a racetrack before she could drive a car on a road.
Okay.
So what's the point in having a boy? My two girls are just as rough and tumble as what a son that I could have had. So sure. I've got the best of both worlds.
Good on you, Phil.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. Heaps of calls coming through. Jeez, there's a lot of different opinions.
It's interesting, isn't it? I thought people would go down on one side, but
They have, but certainly 80% of the callers say you shouldn't choose the sex.
Ooh.
Well, there you go.
Kid Lotto.
Thanks, everybody.
That is the thing. If you are looking for a couple of boys, too, it sounded like Lee from Jim Boomba was looking to offload his as well. So, I mean, you get two for free there.
Pain, doesn't it? Quiz question for children of the 80s. Listen to this.
I loved it. Monkey magic. Pig's hair. Chippa-tucka.
I'm sorry, Ed. I know you're of a younger generation, but you...
Yeah, I've seen the whole series because they replayed it in the 90s. And
oh, did they give it another run?
Yeah, ABC ran it a couple of times, and you know the spirit of Monkey is irrepressible. Is that what it is?
Yeah,
you're onto it.
I wish I'd watched it back in the 90s because then I might have understood it, because it sure as hell looked like there are a lot of people on drugs.
What was the lion? You know, the lion, the monk? I've had a look at a photo of him this morning. He was stoned. There's no doubts at all. Oh, mate.
Was that Tributaka?
No. The monk who was just already cruising.
Sandy.
No, wasn't Sandy. Sandy the chick?
No. There was no
chick.
What chick?
What are you watching?
there was a chick used to come along on a horse.
Hang on. There's a girl called Sandy in Greece. Is that
Oh, yeah. Hold on. Let me read it. Based on the legendary, because I never looked at it from this angle, Chinese fable, the series follows the adventures of a teen girl and a trio of fallen gods, Monkey, Pigsy and Lion.
Okay, so that just meant the monk was a girl and none of us knew it.
She used to be on the horse, yeah.
Yeah, I just thought she was a very effeminate.
And they were trying to bring an end to a demonic reign of chaos and restore balance to the world. That's what they were up to. I thought they were just belting each other with sticks every once in a while, like this.
Elemental forces caused the egg to happen.
Oh, now have we got a fight?
Sounds like a real ride.
What a show. What an amateurish show it was.
Why were
we watching it? No, because it was so silly. But have we mentioned they're remaking it? That was the big reason brought it up. We haven't mentioned that.
No,
yet, have we?
You just went on for 2 minutes about how good Monkey Magic was.
You cannot remake those cult classics. I'm sorry.
You know where they're making it? In New Zealand.
Oh, my Lord.
Netflix and ABC and TVNZ have teamed up. You, mate, you know your TV, Ed. How will that go with a few Kiwis? I've seen the new cast members. None of them look...
Well, you know why they do it there, because you get the... They could just use all the old sets from Xena, Warrior Princess.
Yes, exactly.
Those are still there. A few of the old dungeons from Spartacus. That was all shot there as well.
Lord of the Rings.
There'll be Tridents.
Yeah. Lord, you could use some Hobbits.
Get some hobbits in. Mm. They still got the hats. Get some hobbits in.
Bring in the hobbits.
Elves.
Hobbits in. That's a great idea.
So they'll just wander around New Zealand solving philosophical issues and bashing a few people.
Oh, I hate it when they do this stuff. It's like trying to remake HR Puffin stuff. You just can't do that stuff.
Well, you can't buy a lot of the things you used to be able to need to be on in HR Puffin stuff. Mm. All those substances are now called Class A restricted, Robin.
They were doing that, weren't they?
Oh, God, yeah. Whoever knew of a flute that could talk?
Well, yeah. What about Scooby-Doo? You know, when they had all those Scooby snacks, they were all stoned, weren't they?
Shaggy was on the gear.
I'm sure I saw an episode where there was smoke coming out of the van and they, oh, geez, I need
oh,
a,
my God.
You want a Scooby snack?
They were always on the munchies.
Oh, they always had the munchies, those two.
They just don't make them like they used to, huh?
They don't, do they?
They just don't.
See, those sort of things should have been banned. Where is our government stepping in those days to close it down?
It's true,
isn't
it?
He loves it.
Had a pretty crappy day yesterday because I went to a funeral, or I thought it was going to be crappy. And I'll give you my history on funerals. My dad died when I was 11, so that was the first funeral I went to.
Jesus, yeah.
And then, of course, 2.5 years ago, I had to organise one for my husband. So funerals are not my favourite thing to do.
They're awful things.
But yesterday's funeral was actually, dare I say, uplifting. And the reason why, the woman who died, it was an amazing melanoma campaigner by the name of Emma Betts. And I came to know her a couple of years ago because I did a number of interviews with her. And she started a blog called Dear Melanoma. But what was so great about the blog was that she just was so honest about cancer. And she just didn't mince her words. It was real and it was true. And she talked about the fact that at 21, she was diagnosed with terminal cancer.
21. Where was it, in her back?
On her back, on her left shoulder. God. And she was working as an aid worker in East Timor. And came home and within sort of 3 weeks was told that it was terminal, and then was able, through with a lot of research and research drugs, to live until 25.
QAMR, well, Queensland, here's the place to be if you ever want to get through a melanoma. We are doing world-breaking stuff.
And the thing is with Emma, that she then chose to raise a lot of money. And I would say to you, if this is something you're interested in, go to Dear Melanoma. You can donate, because she was so passionate about enabling other people to get onto these trials and stuff. Anyway, the thing about her funeral was that because she knew she was going to die, she was very precise about what she wanted. And there were big video screens set up, and she actually spoke to us.
Oh, that's freaky.
In the congregation. Whoa. So there was...
Why not, if you can, if you knew you were going to die and you're a young person with the access?
And she was really, she was telling us how she wanted it to be. She wanted a big production. She wanted it to be over an hour. She wanted a certain amount of people to speak. She wanted us to be happy.
Wow.
Okay.
One of the
things... She designed and built her own funeral.
Entirely, and participated in it.
Wow.
Now, I have to say, you know, as you're reacting in the same way that I thought, oh my God, how's this going to be? But it was so personal, and she had a great sense of humour, and she didn't suffer a fool. So, you know, during halfway through, when her husband was coming up to talk and to read their wedding vows.
God, she was married as well.
Yeah, she got married. And Emily Jade O'Keefe, who used to be on the show, was the celebrant who did it. There was rules for the funeral. So, for example, and the final rule was Serge, her husband, had to come up and show that he'd got a tattoo of her name on his butt. You know, like, it was fun. And the last thing was the order of service. They had Daryl Braithwaite's The Horses, all the words for the horses. And my friend Rebecca Sparrow and another woman, Sarah Wills, got up and they said, look, the final thing, it's a surprise, but you all have to participate. Uh-oh. As the coffin is being carried out, you all have to be on your feet, and we are going to sing as loud as we can Daryl Braithwaite's The Horses. And as much it was...
Well, what an event.
It was huge and it was fun and it was really sad. But I've got to tell you, there's something in planning your own funeral and having it work the way you want it to work.
Oh.
Would you do it?
No, I don't care, because I'm not here.
No. But it does seem as though for that situation, Robin, that it was a, you know, they always say it's a celebration of a life. It does seem as though that with her own instructions... But it did seem as though, you know, that that's what it was like.
So it wasn't sad, because I can remember being a funeral director. My sister owned Logan Funerals for about 30 years. Now, went to a fair few when I was younger. They're very sad ones. When young people lose their lives, it's usually fairly sad. She's turned the corner on that and said, no, don't be sad. Is that
right? It was sad.
Was there any laughs at the funeral?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there was rounds of applause. And it was kind of like none of us dared not do as she said, because she kept coming back up on the screen going... This is what we're going to do next. It's like, okay, Em, no worries, mate. We're right there with you. So, yeah, I mean,
did
if
you learn something? Because often that's the main thing you take away from a funeral, is some learnings.
I learned a lot about her, and I already knew she was courageous, but her parents have said they're going to continue with the Dear Melanoma, and they want to raise a whole lot of money. So,
good stuff.
Good on them.
Yeah, oh, nice. Now on Triple M, we're checking in with Gordy Tallis. Tallis. Everyone loves Tallis. Gordy, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are we?
I feel ripped off. The NRL told me there was going to be Thursday night footy, and for the last 2 weeks, there's been nothing.
I know, isn't it? It's actually, mate, look, I love Monday night footy. They took it off us. They started, you know, teasing us with a bit of Thursday night, and it feels like it just shortens the weekend up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was
a long weekend, Thursday, Friday. But, Marto, do you know why? There's games on Tuesday. Anzac Day. There's two clashes. So
but just have one on Tuesday, because my neighbour and I looked at each other, and we've made it a bit of a pattern to have a beer on a Thursday, watch the first half, or when it was daylight savings, so we used to watch the whole game. And that was our Thursday night, and they've snatched it from us. You can't do that.
I know, isn't it? Isn't it? Yeah, look.
It's disgusting.
Mate, well, they could have moved one of the Saturday games, couldn't they?
I don't know.
It's about boring. Put it on Thursday.
That's a good... Hey, Gordy, let's talk player moves, because bizarrely in the NRL, it's mid-season that players decide that they want to move clubs. So we've seen Aaron Woods go from the Tigers to the Bulldogs and Kieran Foran go from the Warriors to the Bulldogs. Mate, were the Bulldogs worried that their team was too likable at the moment? So they thought they might bring in Aaron Woods and Kieran Foran.
Yeah, it sort of seems a bit like, look, it's a worst-kept secret. Woodsy going to the Dogs. The deal was done 3 weeks ago. Matty and Paul Kemp broke it on our show last night. Tedesco's the real one. Tedesco signed with the Raiders, backflipped, went back to the Tigers, then he signed with the Bulldogs. Then he backflipped, and normally you can backflip and go back to your old club. Well, then he backflipped and went to the Roosters.
Jesus.
So,
what's going on there?
So who's trusting?
And then
it says to me he can't
Kieran
be trusted.
Foran, and then Kieran Foran, you know, only a month ago before he played his first game, there was this feature story on him when he's walking through the Warriors, corridors, talking about this is his favourite club, this is where he's always wanted to be, this is where his hero played. And obviously, he's going to have to do the same spiel at the Bulldogs. But he just, well, hopefully somebody wrote it down for him.
Yeah, that's right. Off auto cure, mate. Yeah, he might get through that. Gordy, we've got to move it to the end of the season. It's so ridiculous. I mean,
part of it is part of it's no. I think I told you a couple of weeks ago. You know, sport is soap opera for men, and we can't talk about a lot of other things. You know what I mean, because you see all the results. So if this is it, and we've had the highest rate, and you know what? If I'm a Dogs fan, I'm excited now, or I'm going no, because who do I leave?
Who
do I leave out? What are we going to fill the papers with if there's not this written about it? And you know what? Deep down, it doesn't really worry you unless they're leaving your club. Everybody else reads, oh, God, well, he's going to that.
But
until they leave your club like a Ben Hunt, but it hasn't really affected Brisbane that much, and it hasn't really affected Ben Hunt's form. I thought he's been pretty good in the opening few games of the season.
It's impacted what's happened between songs in here, though, I will say. You boys have chatted about it a lot.
We do talk a lot of league.
Well, there it is. So the soap opera for men is working.
Yeah, there you go. Now, Gordy, finally, I would be very remiss of me not to ask this, because earlier we were talking about big names on a plane, and you are on a lot of planes in your time. Who is the biggest name person that you've ever seen on an aeroplane?
The biggest name person I've sat with is Mark Knopfler, the Dire Straits singer.
Oh, honey for nothing and your chicks for free.
About 10 years ago. Yeah. Well, mate, he was my first ever concert. I had to sit outside the Townsville Showgrounds. I was about 12 when they came and toured. So I'm sitting there, and he was a bit like Marto. He just put the headphones on and looked straight ahead and didn't want anybody to talk to him. He wasn't like you, Robin, where you wanted to engage in conversation. Yeah.
Or Gordon Tallis, one of the person. If you get in a convo anyone with Gordy, it goes for a while.
Oh, no, Marto, I'm a bit like you on the plane. I sort of put my headphones on and I want to... Yes, on the plane recently, because when you jump on them 4 days a week, sometimes you don't want to talk to people.
Look, Gordy's right. Sometimes there's only a few hours in the day and you need to watch Big Bang Theory, and I respect that. So, Gordy, mate, big round of footy.
Look at the pictures in the paper, because I can't read.
No.
Gordy, tell us. We'll hear you on the AMs. We'll see you on Fox over the weekend. Buddy, have a nice one.
Pleasure, guys.
Robin Bailey presents The 50s Guide to Good Etiquette.
Oh, yes, it's a book called Etiquette, the Blue Book of Social Usage. It belongs to a friend of mine. In fact, it belongs to his mother. Paul Gleason loaned it to me. She got it and was given as a wedding present in 1959.
A wedding present.
A wedding present.
How to behave yourself.
Yeah, Etiquette, the Blue Book of Social Usage. It's by Emily Post, who apparently had been writing editions on etiquette since 1922.
In the Women's Weekly or something.
Oh, like was that. It? So, you know, I've got many readings to do, but let us talk about the lost convention of the chaperone. because I am thinking of your daughter.
What is a chaperone?
Well, exactly. Someone who basically, it's hard for the modern generation to believe that such a person as the chaperone of yesteryear really existed. It is true, however, that no young girl still in or barely out of her teens may live alone. Under ordinary circumstances, one who has no parents lives with other relatives. But in the case of a young girl with no immediate family, but who has an ample estate, her guardians usually engage a resident chaperone to look after her and to protect her reputation from the still able-bodied Mrs. Uplifted Eyebrows and her ilk until thoroughly able to protect herself. Okay.
What does this mean?
What is this? You're lost already, aren't you?
I started to zone out there for a while.
Okay. May a young woman ever go to a man's apartment unchaperoned?
Good question.
Okay. This question is more often asked and harder to answer than any other question of the present day. Considered solely from the point of view of etiquette, the answer is no.
Oh.
Considered in regard to a girl of her teens or a young woman who is not very worldly wise, the answer is no.
Oh.
But times have changed and the point of view of the modern world has turned from the consideration of etiquette as applied to society and extract that young woman with professional careers, young women of new independence, to be considered.
Oh, so hang on. So that's getting back to Mato's daughter. So a girl who's 18 years old, living in a foreign city and doing, living in a share house and working in a pub.
She's got Snook from Dubbo, some bloke Moose from Tamworth, and the other two I gave up after that.
This is my
Moose. That's not living unaccompanied. Like, well, no, they're chaperones of a different sort.
Well, Miss Emily
Prost
says...
They were chaperoning a lot of empties at their house when I popped in there last weekend.
Plenty of young women do dangerous or foolish or stupid things and do not suffer the slightest effect, either ill or otherwise.
She's a barmaid at a Balmain pub two nights a week until 3:30 a.m. Is that dangerous?
Oh, I reckon it might well be. But according to old Emily Prost, you can't do it.
What is that 1950s book about sending your privates to someone in a text message?
Yes.
Okay,
what's the equivalent?
There is an entire chapter on telephone etiquette.
Oh, do that
and
next
I will
time.
Get to yeah, that yeah, next week.
Sexting in the 50s, is that what it's called?
I think that was cutting a hair off your groin and sending it to your lover.
Jesus.
So, guys, I was running through the city a couple of days ago and I was kind of stunned to see that there were a number of homeless people living in places that I guess I didn't anticipate. Under the Kurilpa Bridge, I saw like a whole setup. And, you know, it's kind of commonplace in Sydney and Melbourne to see homeless people and people asking for money. But I was a bit shocked, I guess, in our fair city that there were people who had to live like that. So I was curious to find out more about being homeless in Brisbane. And so we have got Nev, who's come into the studio.
Hello.
Hey, Nev.
Hello.
You were homeless.
Yeah, that's right.
What happened? How did you get there?
Well, I moved out of a rough situation, boarding house, so, and I decided to not be put in that situation again.
Nev, can I know a fair few homeless people. Can I put it to you? Those boarding houses, a lot of them are the halfway houses for blokes as they get out of jail.
That's
a pretty
right.
violent place, and there's a lot of ice involved, isn't there?
Yep.
And there's a lot of random violence against people.
Yep.
I gave a ute to a bloke to live in. It was unregistered. He just lived in the back rather than living in one of those boarding houses.
Yep.
Very sad. Where did you go after you moved out of the boarding house?
I went out of the city, out in the suburbs. I used to come into the city, but I'd sleep out in the suburbs.
Wow, safer.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you sleep in the same place each night?
Generally, yeah, but I'd always have backup spots in case someone was hanging around. I'd just go to plan B.
And what makes a good place to stay?
Somewhere where people don't pass through so often.
You know these guys, Robin first noticed it because there's always been a heap of blokes under the Kurilpa Bridge. Well, now I notice that they'll back up to Pioneer Concrete to that wall there. They've set up a little camp
right.
there. The cops will move you on every once in a while, won't
they? That's right, yep.
Nick from Orange Sky Laundry and now Orange Sky Showers, of course, the fantastic charity that was started here in Brisbane and now it's all over Australia. The guys, of course, won some Australian of the Year honours for their work. G'day, mate.
Good morning.
Now, I believe that you met Nev doing your work.
That's right. Neville was one of the first friends who welcomed us into the streets of Brisbane, and without Nev's support and generosity in, you know, welcoming two complete strangers, Nick and Lucas, and our Orange Sky van. We wouldn't have the success, but, you know, 29 months on, Neville's now one of our full-time employees at Orange Sky.
Oh, is he?
Neville's one of our 14 staff, and Neville's now, you know, off the streets. Each and every week, Neville helps fellow homeless friends wash and dry clothes commercially. So we do all the Brisbane Roars washing. Neville facilitates the Lady Salento hospital washing, but Neville trains and employs homeless friends to wash and dry clothes commercially. And people like Nev are just like us, but 105,000 Australians tonight are homeless. And through people like Nev's help, we can transition people and connect them back.
How many homeless people in Brisbane right now?
I think it's about 22,000.
22,000?
So there are mothers and kids out on the streets too?
Absolutely. You know, it takes one or two or three things to go wrong in someone's life and they find themselves sleeping on the streets each and every week. Our vans are out all across Australia and we see people that are mothers, that are sisters, that are uncles, you know, who used to be in work 2 weeks ago and are now on the streets, and it can happen so quickly.
So Nev, what was your day like?
Well, the night's always a short sleep. I'd probably go for a run.
Go for a jog.
Go get meals. Probably try and catch up some sleep somewhere during the day.
You don't sleep all that well at night time, would you?
You'd get a short sleep. Yeah. Probably want to catch up during the day.
Yeah.
I think there's all a remarkable story with Neville around his first ever marathon too.
Which one did you do?
Gold Coast.
How'd you go?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, got through it well.
Go on, tell us your time. Yeah. What was it? What was your time?
It was 3 hours and 22 minutes.
How many?
3 hours and 22 minutes.
Well, you actually ran. 9%.
You actually ran.
Yeah.
Wow.
OrangeSkyLaundry.com.au. You can buy a shirt there. Of course, you can sign up there to go and volunteer or to donate as well if you want to. Nick, nice to see you again. Thanks for coming in. And Nev, thanks so much for coming in and telling us your story today. And good luck. I assume you're running in the Commonwealth Games with a time like that.
Good. That's a very good time.
Thank you.